16th of August in the morning, with Sarah, Jonathan, Azita and Ivan.
Please tell me more about the crow, the Sankharupekayana, because I thought that it's before Sankharupekayana, the crow goes and come and grows.
I don't have the details now, but I think in the Visuddhimagga, one of the similes used for Sankharupekayana is that of the crow that doesn't just land once, but flies around and comes back,
It becomes Sankharupekayana. The other yana tries hard to find a way, and then nowhere else, so no need to go around.
I see. I would have to check. Yeah. From my recollection was that it was under the description of Sankharupekayana itself.
Yeah. But we have to think about it, over it.
Yes.
Whether it's before that, because as it flied around and around,
yes,
looking this or that place, nowhere else.
The outlet. Yana.
Stop going around. It's just a matter of the word.
Yes.
Because it's not just the word, it's the way it is. But people try very hard to find out the definition of the word, exactly whether it has to be this or that. But the way it is, at that moment, it's called by this word.
So from your recollection, it's referring to the jnana beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there must be only one or two vipassana. But there must be other one or two before Sankharupekayana. Sankharupekayana is the last before Khotrapu.
I think also the word Sankharupekayana sometimes refers to that jnana and sometimes it refers to the ones up to Sankharupekayana perhaps.
The beginning and the final one maybe. Because even for jhana bhavana, it's also Sankharupekayana before the jhavana of jhana.
When it refers to Sankharupekayana prior to jhana, what does it mean? It's just referring to that stage.
Yeah. The mind has to be so calm to that degree.
Okay. Different from upachara samadhi.
Uh-huh. In Patisampadamagga, there are altogether 10 Sankharupekayana.
So, just in brief, what are the 10? One's referring to the different jhanas, mm-hmm, and one's referring to the different
stage of enlightenment, and also before Palasamapati.
So, if you say that the crow simile refers to, according to your understanding, just before Sankharupekayana, trying to find the way, and
it's
there's
the
no
Vipassana jhana. Munjitutkammatyata, something like that.
Yes. And what does it mean, trying to find a way?
No, not the way. Just try so hard. It's still the fight for it, not in the real sense. But it means that since it's not stable as Sankharupekayana.
Oh, since the jnana is not as stable.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not the Sankharupekayana,
yes,
so it cannot be the same. But actually, I don't think too much about this because it's just reading.
Yes.
I was just trying to remember how this came up in terms of the discussion we have, because usually it starts with some practical issue, doesn't it? Do you remember
yes.
the context?
Yes. Well, this was a point that a friend raised, who suggested that there were insights right up to Sankharupekayana in previous lives, or there could be. So it relates to the discussion on prior attainments and whether it's just reach that stage of insight and that's it, continue on, or whether it drops back or
is
has
this on
to
the question of whether panya can never be lost, as it were? Is this how it came up?
It is related to that, and it's related to whether the bodhisattva had attained any stages of insight in previous lives. And it sounds a little bit like an academic question, but it actually has a little bit more relevance to right view and wrong view, because there's also the idea that someone may develop stages of insight now or in previous lives, and then they may return or it may drop down or something like this.
One can never be lost, can it?
No.
Once one has attained, how can one would say that one hadn't attained at all?
Attained to
the stage of panya. Different stages of panya.
Right. So I would imagine, though, at my stage, if this rebirth somewhere else and I didn't hear the Dhamma, it would be great accumulations for going off and doing all sorts of other things. So any panya that is developed,
I think that no accumulation is lost as such. That's the whole idea of being accumulations. If they got lost, then they wouldn't accumulate, would they? But the relative balance can change, and the conditions for certain accumulations to manifest more than others can change. But the idea of accumulations being lost, I think, is just not it.
Otherwise, we don't use the term accumulation.
There'd be temporary additions to the pile, and then they'd wither away.
I have a question which is slightly related about Satchajnana. Sometimes we say this is firm conceptual understanding of the Four Noble Truths, and when there is Satchajnana, one won't go wrong or one won't be led off on other paths. So it's a kind of pariyatti, but one won't go wrong.
The three rounds. The first one is pariyatti, the second one is the patipatti.
So it's pariyatti, but pariyatti of a degree that one won't go wrong.
When we talk about pariyatti, it does mean just reading with memory of number and words.
No, mm-hmm.
But it's the understanding that now we are talking about realities, for example, seeing and hearing, and the understanding grows better and better, even it's intellectually. One can see that it is the first satya to be known, or to be inside it.
So on Satchanulomika Jnana, it says that it's knowledge in conformity with the truths, this conceptual knowledge of Four Noble Truths accompanied by understanding and acceptance of them. Is this kind of jnana always just conceptual understanding?
Because otherwise, what's the difference between patipatti and this jnana? No difference at all. But one can see that even one reads a lot, but what about the wrong practice? See, so it doesn't mean that one has this satchajnana at all just by reading.
Can we say that there can be conceptual understanding that is based on direct understanding?
And on ariyasatya.
And in this expression, Satchanulomika Jnana, what is the meaning of the anuloma?
These are the 10 towards the path and the realization.
So anuloma really means just 10 towards.
Right.
Okay. And anuloma jnana means so 10 towards nibbana. So anuloma before Margaviti is just 10 towards.
Because
Margaviti.
You see that in the old days they used Pali language in daily life. So the word that Buddha used must be exactly the same as the daily language. But when we heard about all these terms, we think very special word.
Yes.
Like anuloma, it has to be that level of understanding. But actually, by itself, it's just 10
towards. Okay. Because anuloma is used in different contexts with different meaning. We think it always refers to a particular jnana.
Right. Even the word sammapatthana, we think that it's only the sammapatthana of the Bodhipakkhya Dhamma, but actually the word means just the viriya, at moment of even thinking that are not doing wrong thing. That is also sammapatthana in the lowest sense. Very common sense. See, so we have to understand the meaning, the broad meaning, whether it's used here or there.
So you're saying that the Buddha didn't use any special language for his teaching.
Right.
He spoke like we speak now.
Right. But the way he taught is different, because even Chakkhuvijnana is very simple Pali term. And the person who hadn't heard before in the old days had no understanding about seeing. But he used the same word, Jakuvinyana, for everyone. And then he explained a lot in detail, so people began to understand better. Like we use the word in Thai language. You don't have to use Pali term in daily life at all.
But the terms that he used, ordinary terms, well, they had a very specific meaning.
Ordinary meaning.
Ordinary
meaning. And also specific
and also
meaning
technical.
When he used to explain.
When a Buddha is born, and he's born with certain accumulations, and I think the language is one of those benefits. Like Thai language can be better for Dhamma than English is.
I'm not sure, because the Thai use a Pali term like Nama Tham and Rupa Tham in different sense.
Yeah, I'm seeing that it's more the individual understanding.
Yesterday, Ajahn was also talking about how it's better just to use one's natural language that one's used to using, and instead of just saying anatta, 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 better to try to explain in one's own language to test whether one really does understand it. This seems a little bit different from comments you made before about how the Pali terms are more precise,
yes,
and if you understand it better to use the Pali terms.
Because we cannot have Thai language in the old day, so we need the Pali meaning to represent.
I think it's like English. It's sometimes very vague, some of the English words. We disagree sometimes on the word that we should be used.
But reality is much deeper than that. Because no matter we use the right word, but it depends on the understanding. People can get wrong meaning. For example, rūp nāng, see? How come?
Yeah. It's very much to do with the accumulations of the people who heard it too, their ability to understand.
So it does not depend on the word itself. It depends also on understanding too. And people accept rūp nāng so easily. And some have used Pali term after the rūp nāng, nitsithana rūpang or something like that. Just add the word rūpang.
Okay. Make up their own Pali term to give it credibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they believe that it's rūpa. So it's simple for them to just add the word rūpang after that.
I think rūpang is the sitting rūpa.
Well, and bang is something.
Nang.
Yeah, but you also saying
it's the Pali term. Okay. The prefix and suffix, this is a suffix, like namang, rūpang, or viriyo, something like that.
Probably the English language is bad because of the lack of understanding by most people, so it's difficult to come to grips with one word that you think works, because everybody has different ideas.
Those who study Pali, they study the way to translate it according to grammar, but they don't understand it. So just depend on them for the translation. But reality is there to be proven, to be studied. Because the Thai can simply say, all dhammas are anatta. They keep on saying that, but not seeing now, not us, not self.
Yes, it is. It's easy to put it out there, but not take it in.
Right.
Yeah, all dhammas are anatta, yes.
On the other hand, if you just swap the language, you can still say it without the understanding.
But it's closer in one's own language.
Yeah.
In one's own language than in the Pali.
All realities are not self.
In Thai, it's closer to reality than just use Pali term. All dhammas are anatta, something like that.
The banter that was going on with Gilbert was interesting.
On the list?
Yeah. I couldn't understand where he was really coming from. I think he picked up on the wrong people to come to a conclusion. And I think the last one was Nina saying that Ludwig felt that the worldly things and realities were hand in hand, which I felt wasn't quite.
Can it mean that they go together all day, all night, from birth to death? Can that be the meaning?
Maybe Jonathan or Sarah understood more of what was being said.
I think the discussion is about conventional language and ultimate language, or conventional truths and ultimate truths.
What do you mean? Hand in hand?
Conceptions.
Well, both sets of truths have their use. The actual situation that was really under discussion was the idea of saying there is no self, no Nina, no Ludwig, no John, no Sarah, this sort of thing. For some people, that's very difficult to accept.
Is it not true? This is the question.
Well,
it doesn't mean that you'd like to agree or not, just not belong to that.
They think it denies the compassion and
metta and
the human aspects.
No, we'll have better when there is no I, see. When he thinks that it's he and Nina, then his metta is not wider or broader than
those two.
Yeah.
I think when you study the Abhidhamma or have some knowledge of it and see that these are the realities, you can't find a self in it. If you put it all together, mm-hmm. it's a self, yeah. but it never is all together. Mm-hmm. It is only at certain times.
He thinks that we stress too much on namas and rupas and dharmas and elements and not enough on human qualities like helping in society.
I think that it's not as much as it should be.
Not enough.
Not enough.
I think he lacks really understanding of realities that are rising and falling away, and therefore he feels that there is control, that one can have compassion, one can have these qualities or make them happen. So I think that's the problem. That's what I gathered anyway. I was trying to sift through it and understand it a bit better, but sometimes I'm not sure if I've grasped the point or not, but that's what I felt that he was getting at. And therefore, he does feel that talking about no self doesn't really enhance those qualities, which I think is wrong.
I think that it's the turning point to wrong view, little by little. It's possible not be courageous enough to accept the truth as it is.
Is it courageous or just no accumulations to see it, Ajahn?
Because courageous also conditioned too. To see that it's so difficult and it's so true.
Courageous in the sense that you can let go, do you mean?
I mean that it takes time to study and to really understand until it's the moment of realization. Because the truth is the truth. Even right now, if one just think or understand simply that it's not permanent, and then no interest, see, no courage to follow. To realize that this can be realized.
What I've come to understand from being in the talks all the time and seeing people come through and passing and going to the lists and reading, it all boils down to whether people can appreciate moments. It's always appreciating how important the moment is. And they leave if they don't grasp that, or they argue other points because we're not grasping that, then they're caught up in conceptual understanding. No understanding of reality.
People think it sounds like a cold shower or something like this. I think if we say too directly there are only dharmas and there's no control, that it sounds like a
didn't
cold
Buddha
shower
say that?
To say.
Didn't Buddha say that? We just follow the teachings. Yeah. We cannot change.
I think the Buddha said it even worse than that. He said it was like having your head on fire.
So there are many people who study dharmas for their own sake, still their own, their self. I know this and I have less that, always come to I. That's why they try to have the new system to develop.
This came up in our discussion yesterday morning at breakfast, the resistance to the idea of no control. Basically, people would like I to still be able to control and arrange and have certain dharmas arising and be a better person. These suttas we read about aspirations, for example, the Sankharu Papati Sutta, reappearance by aspiration, bhikkhus, I will teach you reappearance in accordance with one's aspiration. A bhikkhu possesses faith, virtue, learning, generosity and wisdom. He thinks, oh, on the dissolution of the body after death, I might reappear in the company of well-to-do nobles. He fixes his mind on that, establishes, develops it. These aspirations and this abiding of his, thus developed and cultivated, lead to his reappearance there. How should one understand that?
The samsara, endless.
Endless, okay. So just appreciating the value of kusala and the results of kusala. And when he makes this wish or this aspiration, oh, may I be reborn in heavenly realms,
That's you now. Did you think of being reborn in hell? Or by development kusala, it will lead to
Right. Just confidence in Kusala that will lead to good results. Mm-hmm.